There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look way down the river, and what do you think I see? I see a band of angels, and they're coming after me. Ain't no grave can hold my body down.
Welcome one and all once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 135. This week we are going to talk about the, I don't want to say the wonderful world of fictional death, but we are going to talk about fictional death. So just as a heads up, if you couldn't figure it out from the topic, there will be spoilers. Lots of spoilers for everything, video games, comic books, TV shows that had a really, really brutal wedding this weekend. So all types of spoilers will be included here. So if you don't want to be spoiled on anything, don't listen to this show. Joining us this week, our panel of morticians, we have Trent.
Hey there. Everything is actually warm in Canada for a change, so clearly there's a nuclear holocaust that's coming your way.
Uh-oh. Speaking of death...
Speaking of death, if only we were that lucky to get rid of Canada, we have Wesley.
I still haven't read Game of Thrones. And so whatever went down on Sunday, I'm still very only tangentially knowledgeable of what the heck went down.
Well, you'll figure it out soon enough.
I get the feeling.
And we have Nicholas.
Master of Puppets, I'm pulling your strings, twisting your mind and smashing your dreams. Blinded by me, you can't see a thing. Just call my name, because I'll hear you scream, Master.
Okay.
Protein.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to throw some metallic at you.
Knife.
He's working on his
metallic. What was released this... There's a new Megadeth album released this week.
Give a shit.
You don't like
I'm
it?
I'm sorry, I hate Megadeth.
Oh.
They're like, the dude got kicked out of Metallica.
Oh.
I don't know if he got kicked out for being an asshole, but he was an asshole. And then he turned into more of an asshole.
Did you hear that Chester from Linkin Park is currently heading up Stone Temple Pilots?
Yeah, what's that about?
I have no idea, but their new single with him is actually half decent.
They're all suing each other and stuff.
Well, they always sue each other. I think that's how they show love.
We're going to call a timeout on this discussion.
Tangent.
Not even a tangent. We haven't even started the show. But as we've been trying to do recently, we're going to kick it off with a pole position.
In the danger zone. Pretty soon they'll be off on a mission.
Hydrofoil mode, Rhodey.
Hydrofoil engaged, Dan. Pole
position. Last week's poll was really one-sided. Streaming services, it was no contest. Netflix dominated. I don't even think anybody voted for Hulu Plus or Amazon Videos. So, there's that. I wonder if that's going to change. Well, I don't know how many parents we get to the site, but I wonder how much of that's going to change now that Amazon has scooped up exclusivity for Nick Jr. and Nickelodeon shows.
Interesting.
Because I've seen a lot of people complain because they can't find Dorothy Explorer or what is it? The Wikis? I don't know. Yeah, on Amazon, on Netflix anymore. So this week's poll is a bit different. It's a bit more topical. I forget. I think somebody from the gaming podcast gave me this topic, and I figured I'd run with it. This week we're going to we're asking, what would you rather see a sequel for at E3 between Sony's four big platformers, Crash Bandicoot, Sly Cooper, Ratchet and Clank, or Jak and Daxter? So, check that out. It's been a very even race so far, I think, except for Sly, since we just had one 3 months ago. So, there you go. So, yeah, that's pole position. Now, on to this week's main discussion, which is fictional deaths, as we mentioned. And as we kind of hinted at in the intro, it is related to this past week's episode of Game of Thrones, in which everybody died.
That seems to be the general consensus. Is the, as I put it, the shit goes down.
I don't want to spoil it for y'all, so I won't talk about specifically what happened. But yeah, shit went down. This is the, if you know anybody who's been reading, who read Game of Thrones and has been talking to people who watch the show, they're always like, "Oh, wait till you get to this point. This is what they were talking about." This is what everybody who reads the book would, "Good fuck," and just throws the book across the room. Unless they were reading it on a phone or something, in which case they just kind of glared at it.
They could still toss that, who knows?
That would be
important. They could, but they'd have a broken phone.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who have broken phones from this incident. Not me. I have never broken a phone. But yeah, this is, it's kind of, and the thing is, I mean, of course, you know, I'm Nikki has read the book. If this isn't the season finale either, so there's still more to come.
Oh, yeah, but the way Game of Thrones works,
it's usually the setup. It's usually the kind of fallout from that, and then it leads into the season.
Yeah,
because
they always have the crazy shit that happens in the episode before last. And the last one, they have like a cliffhanger at the end.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I think I was talking with my friend. I think episode 9 of season 1 was in Ned Dark beheaded.
Yes, I have a funny story behind that. I have not seen Game of Thrones yet. So this is what happened. Go over to a friend's house.
What are you doing on this podcast? Why aren't you watching it?
I have the episodes. I'm going to sit down and marathon watch them soon. But,
damn straight.
But I go over to my friend's house. I'm going down there, walk down to his basement where he has his entertainment center, look to the right of me, beheading of Ned Stark. I look this is the first thing I said. Well, spoiler alert.
You better be spoiled. At least you spoiled it by like actually watching it.
I was laughing my head. I actually said, and I love, and hit my friend's wife was like, "Oh crap, I am sorry." I'm like, "I don't know the character. I don't know anything. It's not that bad. I'll be fine." Just I couldn't help but start laughing. Like, oh wow, like my first glimpse of Game of Thrones, beheading scene of a major character. Yes.
Yeah, and that was another one that, because I think the notion is a lot of shows, not just shows, but any product, are usually afraid to cut off what we perceive as main characters, and to see one of the big main characters of the first season bite it before the end of the season was really shocking.
Oh yeah.
Well, I've heard
not even the perceived main character. It's the character who, in most fantasy novels, would be the main protagonist. He'd be like the hero. Whatever.
Yeah. And, I mean, again, not to kind of give too much spoilers, but at the same time, the last two seasons, the guy who was kind of built up to avenge him bites it as well.
Holy shit.
So it's like...
Damn! Oh my god.
A lot of major characters have died, and it's...
watching the show.
George R. Martin cannot be said to have affection, too much affection for his characters. Like, he loves them, but he's like, yeah, I'm not afraid to kill them. I think Joss Whedon said something on Twitter yesterday, the day before. He's like, hey, George, could you, like, you know, tell people about how much you do this so people will leave me alone?
That's the truth. Joss Whedon is like the TV equivalent of George R. R. Martin of... They're gonna die.
Well, I was saying to the girl I was last dating, like, you know, I love you, but I can't love you too much or Joss Whedon will kill you.
That's really good, actually.
I approve.
Yeah, but I imagine it's the same thing for them. If they didn't have the characters, they probably realized that killing them wouldn't have the same emotional impact as somebody that they actually do like. Because I'm sure, and we'll get to this during the course of the podcast, there have been deaths of characters, not in other mediums, that just had no effect on you. Like, at this point, does anybody care if Jean Grey dies again? I don't even know if she's back right now. So.
No, she's still... Let's see if we can explain this really quickly. Jean Grey, in the current form, is dead, but she's back as a younger version of herself from the 60s.
Comic books.
Yep. Yep.
I'm sorry. All I heard was bzz, 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 What are comic books?
They're a thing that's generally pretty awesome.
And I mean, speaking of a genre that kind of abuses the depth of characters with diminishing emotional returns, I think comic books are extremely guilty of that.
Oh, Lord, yes. I'm still amazed Uncle Ben hasn't been brought back from the dead. To this day, I'm amazed that Uncle Ben...
Spoilers!
Oh, come on! Spoilers. Oh, come on!
Uncle Ben has been dead for 50 years.
He's
going
been
strong.
Dead for 50 years.
But yeah, I mean, I was kind of upset when Damian Wayne bit it. But I think Grant Morrison did a good job with that character, and he had a natural character arc where you kind of, you know, he went from a kid that nobody liked to being one of, almost everybody's, you know, favorite, one of their favorite characters in the books. So you kind of felt for him. So when he died, there was an impact there, especially being the circumstances in which he died, which was a war between his mother and father.
Damn, people were pissed when he died. Between Twitter, Tumblr, and everything else, it was like, no. It's like, Grant Morrison really ticked off people with this one. But when you read it, it's like, damn, not bad. He handled that very well. Once you calm down from the fact that, holy shit.
And that's what you want, because if a character dies and nobody's talking about it, then it's your Johnny Torch.
Yeah. Oh, Johnny.
So yeah, what are some other deaths that you folks have kind of dealt with, I guess?
It's actually funny. The first thing that came to my head, it's, I know, as we already mentioned, Joss Whedon, but Jenny Calendar.
Jenny Calendar, okay, she was a really minor character. The only thing that was shocking about that was how crazily she died.
Is why it worked. So it's like, it's kind of one of the things where...
A much bigger death was Tara on that show.
Tara, but, yeah, it's like Jenny Calendar, when Tara was the, oh shit, death.
I can, what about Buffy's mom?
Oh, that was oh shit.
Okay, well it was surprising. That's a great episode too.
Yeah.
I don't know. One of the bigger deaths, and this is, probably won't make a lot of sense to people who are kind of new to the Scream series. You remember the Scream movie series, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first movie, before it was ever released, and this was before the time of the internets. Like, everyone was seeing that, like, Drew Barrymore was the star. She was front and center on all the promotional artwork. She got top billing for the movie. And to see her die in the first, like, 5 minutes of the movie and just never be referenced again, I was kind of a little blown away by at the time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the purpose of that scene, and they tried to kind of mimic that for the rest of the series, but it never had that impact, because you can't really reuse the same trick if people know what to expect, unless they kept trying to do.
It was mostly just like standard horror tropes. Yeah.
Yeah, because didn't they try to kill, what is it, Omar Epps? Or. I'm good as. Yeah, like, there's certain people like, oh, you're going to kill him? Okay, can I help?
Yeah, pretty much.
But, yeah, I mean, Joss Whedon was big on it. Buffy's mom was on. Especially being that it wasn't like. It was like a natural cause, wasn't it? It wasn't like...
Yeah.
And it's
natural
funny.
Cause? No.
And I guess the funny thing with that, I guess not funny, but is like they kind of built up the first half of that season where she had that huge attack, and she survived, so you think, okay, she's clear, and then she just drops dead one episode.
Yeah.
No real build-up or anything.
That's how it happens, though, in real life. Yeah. And that made it all the more real. One video game death that seems to bother a lot of people that never bothered me at all was Dom's in Gears of War 3.
Oh, I find that scene funny.
See, because, and this is the thing, like, a lot of people, the people who usually complain about it are, like, the dude bros who will only play Call of Duty games, Halo games, and Gears of War games. And they always say, like, oh, Dom, he was there since the beginning, and he was such a nice guy, and the way that he died was so sad. And I'm like, I've never cared about this character. Like, either my palate is too refined to give a shit about this dude bro, or there's something wrong with me. But nothing about that death bothered me at all.
No, I kind of agree with you. I also think that they overplayed their hands by... You know, like, I had this discussion with somebody actually, like, last week, and it's like, they did the whole, we're going to have Soma, we're going to have this very emotional music chain. And I'm like, this scene would have worked if you did one or the other. Doing both, it's kind of, it's hand-fisting that emotion. Like, you're supposed to feel sad. Feel sad for us. Feel sad. Feel sad. And it's like, no, it's not coming. There's nothing.
Feel sad. I don't feel like it anymore.
Yeah, because, I mean, you have those movies and games and comics that try to elicit that emotion which from you. I mean, I hate to go on this tangent, but it's basically what WWE is doing with Triple H right now. They want that. We need you to have Triple H right now.
Oh, no.
And nobody's reacting, so they keep on trying harder and harder. It's like, you're going to F him no matter what. So, F him, damn it. And that's kind of the same thing they did with Dom in that game. And the other thing, and I always hate when they do this, comic books are extremely guilty of this, it's like they kind of telegraph it ahead of time, like, you know, like reviews, but like, there's like this really emotional climax in the middle of the game, and it's like, okay, so they're going to kill off one of the characters, because that's the only way most people know how to do an emotional climax is through murder or death. So, yeah, Dom's a good example of a bad death. What are some other... I know some people are fans of this. I didn't care for it because he died for like 10 minutes. But Trinity and Matrix of Evolutions?
Didn't she die like 3 times?
She died twice. But the second time was like forever.
And she actually died.
Until, wait, no, not forever. Forever until the next iteration. As implied at the end of the third movie.
Oh, whatever.
Matrix Revolution.
Yeah, exactly. Who gives wanking motion?
The other day.
Did you just literally indicate wanking motion through sheer tone of voice? Because that's awesome.
My apologies.
Oh, that's fantastic.
No one... It's Matrix Revolution. I had forgotten she died in that film. I can still barely...
It was a little bit inconsequential. It was like, oh, by the way, Neo, you know how I've been driving this ship because you're blind? I'm kind of dead now. You just keep on going without me. And poor Neo was like, fucking, we're not in the Matrix this time. I can't squeeze her heart.
Oh, no.
And then it kept on going and going and going.
I don't even remember anything of Matrix Revolutions. I couldn't tell. I think I saw that film, and then afterwards, I'm like, I don't know. I don't remember anything. Like, I can tell you small bits of the first Matrix. I can dive into that a little bit, but then getting the Matrix Revolutions, like, I don't know.
I remember, because I'm just, by the end of it, I'm like, why don't you just die already? Like, I didn't care anymore. I wanted her to be dead. Like, she's giving him this huge hero speech while she's dying. Which I can kind of understand, but it goes on forever.
See, I feel like people are really, really obnoxiously hard on Revolutions. If you go back and you watch Revolutions, it's not actually that bad. It's just that the original Matrix was like a masterpiece. It still holds up like a masterpiece today. The other two movies that followed it don't hold up the same way it does. But they're not awful movies.
No, not at all. I actually really like them, and will defend them to the death. But yeah, that first one is significantly better than the other two.
Oh yeah,
I need to rewatch them again one of these days because I can. I don't think I've rewatched Reloaded or Revolution since I first saw them in theater. So, I'm willing to give it another go.
Okay. Any others? I guess Neo dies in that film too. So.
I can name death. The thing is, this is in the books, but it's in the movie as well, and it freaks people out. What about Lord of the Rings when Gandalf bites it?
Oh.
I remember when that came out, because I'm a huge Lord of the Rings jackass. So I'd been reading them since I was six. And when the movies came out, everyone was like, oh my God, Gandalf died. Ooh, it's like, yeah, he did. That's true. Not telling anybody at all, oh yeah, no, he totally comes back because he's Jesus. But it said they had to fucking ruin it.
It's allegory.
They had to ruin it in the trailer. I'm like, imagine how great that would have been as a reveal. Like, by actually having him show up in the trailer in character, like, you show him and stuff. That kind of is like, oh, okay, Gandalf's back. I think it would have been great because there's this one, one of the Two Towers trailers where it just goes to black at one point and then comes back in and suddenly there's Gandalf. I'm like, wouldn't it have been great if it just went to black and you hear his voice and then they never show him? And everybody would have been like, what?
Here's the interesting thing. When I read books, I'm very visual, but I'm kind of like, especially with Tolkien novels, I kind of imagine things being a lot more extreme and fantastical than they were in the movies. So when I saw the movie and Gandalf the White was revealed, I was kind of like, so what? He got his hair dyed and straightened? Because in my head, it was like far more badass, you know?
I know, I would say, because it's still one of the things I remember that death, and I was like, dang, because I actually just recently, like, rewatched part of the, some of the Lord of the Rings movies, and I'm like, damn, and Gandalf's death is just one of those that you first see, and you're like, wow, that's amazing, and then you see that, and then once he returns, you're like, okay, that's awesome, that is just a badass return right there when he, like, okay, that's pretty cool.
Okay, let's see. Well, I guess kind of in that same line, what was your first major, like, oh, I can't believe that just happened, death?
Hey, guys, I gotta go.
Okay.
Okay. See you later.
Later.
So
my first, I guess, first death that I can remember making me go, oh, crap, I'm trying to remember. Shit. Man.
Well, while you're thinking, I can remember mine because I've seen this way too many times. But And Before Time, when Vic's Long Neck's mom bites it.
Oh, I know what mine is now. Never mind.
And she's and you know, she has the hope she's dying, so she's gonna give that ass speech, and you know, it's a very short one. And she's like, I think she's like, go to the valley, whatever. But yeah. Because I used to, I don't know why they wanted to traumatize us, but they used to show us that movie in IMAX just like all the time. And his mom dies in like the first 20 minutes of the film.
That was like one of the few good of the 17, 18 Land Before Time movies.
That's enough, you're not exaggerating.
And you're really not. That's what's funny.
How sad is that? Actually, now that you brought up kind of cartoon kids movies, I totally remember what the first death to really like shake my system was. I was like 9 years old at the time, and I was watching The Iron Giant with my big brother.
So
this is completely spoilerific, but essentially, like, the whole movie is set in like post-war 1950s America, where everyone is all crazed because they're afraid the Soviets and the communists are going to do something terrifying. And then in small town America, this giant, massive robot lands who has the gentleness of like a flower and befriends a little kid named Hogarth. And as soon as the townspeople and the military find out about this, they try and blow him up with a nuclear device. And the nuclear device backfires midair and goes back down towards the town. And realizing that this thing is going to kill the people that were trying to kill him, he flies into it. And as he nears the device, he says, Superman, because Superman is his idol. And he blows the fuck up. He's just gone. And to this day, that's the only time a movie has ever actually made me cry.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, God, Brad Bird, what a brilliant fucking director.
That movie, yeah. That once you hear that super, once he says Superman,
Oh, and he was Superman in that instance.
Except Superman wouldn't die.
Hey,
dude, really?
Whoa. I'm just saying.
What an asshole.
Superman would have grabbed that nuke and thrown it into space because that's what Superman does. He throws stuff into space.
That would have been anticlimactic.
Well, I mean, when Superman... when Superman has...
What if the nuke was magic?
So, when Superman has a problem with death, he just reverses time. As always.
He needs to stop breaking the temporal prime directive. It's a Star Trek reference, I'm sorry.
I wish I could remember one of my first early childhood deaths. I mean, I would say, like, I remember when I was younger and I got to see, like, the death of Optimus Prime for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember seeing that, and that's still one of those... And it's funny, because I was like, holy shit. And
that still bothers me,
it
though.
Still hits you, and it's still...
It's kind of far-fetched, though. Like, and I get why they were trying to do it, and I get why he died, but I'm thinking in my head, like, this guy is a robot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end of the day, he's a robot. And he's literally on an operating table with, like, a VI, like, hooked up to him. and then he turns gray and dies. Like, we can't fix his spare parts?
It's always the story everyone quotes at least once of when you get to see the video of the executive saying, well, we were just clearing the way for the new toy line.
Yes, that's exactly what they were doing. How tragic is that?
They didn't realize that they traumatized an entire generation of children, and that's why in G.I. Joe the movie, when Duke was supposed to die, they do some animation changes, well, mostly voice changes, to say Duke's gonna live when really he was dead.
I super didn't care about whether Duke died or
no
not.
No one really cared, but it was like they just went, oh, we gotta change this. Because we don't want Optimus Prime 2 on our hands.
Yeah. On the other side, though, now, Disney has no qualms with scarring children.
No! Bambi!
Bambi's mom, Mustafa. I mean, you don't see it on screen, but it's implied that Aladdin's mom died. Well, I mean, she does die. And that's implied in this third movie, I think. Jasmine's mom's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Ariel's mom. Is anybody not an orphan in Disney's world?
No. They usually have either a dad or an orphan. Or either have a dad, orphan. Damn.
Wow. Have both parents.
The only person I could think of who has both parents, and that's isn't until the end of the movie, is Rapunzel and Tangled.
You get no parents.
But yeah. But yeah, they really do like having no... And again, you know, like having no parents is different than killing them off on screen, but we saw that with Bambi. Mustafa, which is even worse because his uncle set it up and he made him feel guilty about it, which is just a dick move in general. I was about to say, Toy Story was great about not killing anybody off, though.
The third movie was just freaking nuts, and they don't really kill anybody off, but...
Especially
Toy Story 3 is the one that makes you feel, damn, they actually could come close to, like, nullifying some of these toys.
Yeah, it's the trilogy, you know? I mean, like, this is, if anyone's gonna die, this is the time, you know?
Well, I mean, it didn't kill anybody off, but you kind of get that same kind of emotion with, especially with Bo Peep, when a lot of these characters just aren't in his life anymore. And yeah. I think to a child, and this is kind of what they're going through in the third movie, it's like, once your toys have no use to you, they are kind of dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was a very sad look at life. Again, Disney and Pixar really knows how to pull those heartstrings. And I guess Finding Nemo, his mom dies, doesn't it? Well, actually, isn't it a bunch of kids who die?
Pixar was really good at Up.
Oh God, Up.
Oh my God, you don't even meet his wife, and that whole situation was just like, oh my God, what's happening to my heart?
It break that now. That movie, like it, that is probably one of the most genius like opening I've ever seen. It's just that setup of, okay, here's like the introduction to this man's life.
Yeah.
And his wife and how they found each other and how they fell in love and how they got married and all this. Like, then she dies. Then you're just like, oh shit. Because they do give you a minute to process it. That's what's interesting, how they set this movie up. They give you just that little moment to process it right at before they go into the fun movie. Like one moment to process what you just witnessed. Then into movie.
Yeah.
But you're just like, damn. Because I've watched it at least about two or three times, and every time that scene hits, same emotions well up every time, like clockwork.
Yeah, and here's the thing, and, you know, some people have read it, is that Disney's able, I guess Pixar in this case, is able to elicit that emotion in less than 10 minutes. And there are movies and TV shows that have hours and hours of stuff that really can't do anything like that. I would say, and I'm sure some people will disagree with me, is Gaiman is still trying to recapture that 10 minutes. There are very few deaths in Gaiman, I think, that kind of stand out, and I think the reason for that is that death as a concept is treated so inconsequential in video games. Because I know like one of the big ones is like Arethas in Final Fantasy VII. But you go through a game where you have Helion Potions, you have Phoenix Downs, you have people who can do resurrections and stuff like that. And it's like, you give me the power to heal and to bring people back to their life. But when it's story related, it's like, oh, you got no control. And it's like,
okay.
Yeah, you can't.
I hate when people reference that game, though, because so many characters before her died in Final Fantasy titles. Final Fantasy IV has four main characters, which were all playable, die over the course of it. And I liked all of them.
Final Fantasy VI killed General Leo.
Amongst other people.
But
it starts by General Sellas and Shadow both died, too.
And Shadow, you can save him as long as you hit the right hit the right timing for that one. So Shadow can be saved, but and Celis too, I do believe.
Well, yeah, you need to make her stop committing suicide. That's the deal there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have either of you played the Walking Dead video game?
No, but I hear it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Well, you see, and this is again my problem with video games and death, is that you have no control over it. And I get that, you know, movies and books, you have no control over it either. But they give you this idea, especially in The Walking Dead, where let's have this with no kills because ice cream trucks there. They give you this idea that you are in control of everything, and like you don't have any say. Ultimately, your character has to die no matter what you do. And that's always it's like you're cheating that interactive nature of it, where it's like, we need to elicit this emotion, we're going to have to kill this person. How do we do it in a way that's organic to this game? And very few games have answered that question properly. I mean, I could be wrong, maybe you folks have played games that have deaths that really affected you.
I don't know, it's really weird with gaming deaths. I mean, I would say with like in any game, I mean, I'm trying to think of the last one that really made me go, shit, and it's been a while since I've ever had that moment of like shock of a death that happens right before my eyes. And like, I remember my first playthrough of Suikoden, and I remember when one of the characters then had a duel that supposedly cannot be beat by I do believe it's Pawn, or hang on, I have to look it up really fast, but his death was one of those first ones, because he's the, let's see here, I have to remind myself of the darn thing. Go on, go on a second. I have to look. It's freaking up.
I was trying to think of other deaths in video games, and a lot of them were just kind of coming up blank. I mean, and a lot of the stuff we've been talking about is focused on the hero side, because we expect villains to kind of bite it. So, I don't, I mean, I guess we, I can ask this while we're here. Has there ever been a villain's death that's affected you?
A villain's death?
Take your time.
Yeah, actually. And this is going to sound a little weird to some people. I really like Legend of Dragoon. I know it's a polarizing game and not everyone gets it, but I really dug it. And you spend a majority of the game kind of bashing your head against this antagonist named Lloyd, who is doing all these shady things and pulling strings behind the scenes. And he's responsible for the death of what is arguably the series' most favorite character. And by the time he dies, you realize not only is he not the main antagonist, but he wasn't doing it because he was evil. He was doing it because he ultimately wanted something good. So I felt bad for him. It was kind of like just desserts at the same time, though, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this is one that's a bit different, I think. And I don't know if I felt bad for his death. I mean, he didn't die exactly, but Skyward Sword, Demon Lord, Garaham. He was a very interesting antagonist for Link throughout the game, and then you just kind of find out that he's a pawn for the bigger bad guy, and in order for that guy to be resurrected, he has to die. But if he doesn't die, he becomes his sword. So it's kind of like he gives up his life for you to unleash this ultimate bad guy, and it's like, you know, he was a fun equal, and now it's like the existence was for nothing more than to be a pawn in this giant game that we were playing.
And, by the way, I found the thing as a code, and I remember while we this now there's two deaths in that game that it's like there's the first one was, did you ever play Sakoden series of games, by the way?
I played Sakoden 2.
I think, and I played 3.
Sakoden 1. Was one is a very, very cool little game. It's very powerful. It has a very cool story arc that involves you recruiting the 108 stars of destiny and building your own castle. And it's a really engaging game. And it takes twists, turns, and at one point there's a character of Gremio, who is the guardian to the hero, and he dies. He dies by getting devoured by flesh-eating spores. And there is no and the only way you can bring him back is if you collect all the 100 other stars. Then okay, at the end of the game, Gremio gets resurrected, but there's also another point in the game where if you don't have the character Pawn, who is another character of the 108 stars, if he dies, because if you don't build his levels enough to a certain point in the duel, before the duel, yeah, he dies and there ain't no bringing him back. He's gone. And you can never revive Gremio. And I remember the first time I was like, oh shit. And I did beat the game, but I didn't complete it with all the stars. Now, later on, I beat the game again and got all the stars, and I got to see the really cool, awesome, mega, super happy ending. But when I first played through the game, I got the ow ending. So it was nice to get the happy ending finally after when I replayed it down the road.
Nice. What were you going to say, Trent?
No, that's fine. I just feel like every time I play any RPG, like any game that requires an upwards of 30 hours to invest yourself, I always get really attached to all the characters. So whenever anyone bites the big one, it always takes a toll, you know?
I would say, I mean, I understand, but I feel like even when I get attached to characters, it takes a lot to kind of get me attached to characters and get me to care when they die. Like, I remember one of the deaths that hit me on TV was the death of Terry Bauer. I don't know if any of you watched 24, but Jack's wife who died in season one because of his, you know, it kind of came out of nowhere for people. But I was recently watching this show, and with age and kind of distance, I was just ingrained with her story arc, and I just kind of wanted her to be dead at that point. So it's like, you know, it takes that to kind of get invested in the character to the point when you don't want, like, when they die, like, yes, finally, they're gone. And I feel like a lot of games that, I feel like I get invested in the characters, but not enough to care because I know that, especially in RPGs, somebody has to die. I guess that isn't true. I don't remember anybody really dying in Skies of Arcadia. Or, I don't want to spoil Xenoblade, that's too recent, but I feel like games and RPGs use death as a trope where it's like we need some type of emotional arc here, especially being that that's the easiest way to get a villain to win or to get somebody to hate a villain.
I mean, I think that's overreaching a little bit. I think it's a really effect. I don't like the idea of saying that, oh, RPGs use death as a trope. I don't think that's really fair. I think a lot of games use death as a story element because it's effective. We can all relate with death. You know, the reason why so few movies actually attempt rape scenes is because outside of the fact that they're rarely handled well, very few of us can actually relate with them, you know? So I don't feel like it's a cop out to use death in an RPG or any video game.
I don't think using death is a cop out. I think you kind of getting at this, is like death is probably one of the easier emotions to elicit because we all have been through it at some point in our lives, so we all kind of understand it. And it's one of those things where, like, there's no, you know, like, nobody dies and people are happy about it. You know, so you don't run that risk of like, okay, huh?
I don't know about that.
If you have a people's deaths, I don't want to know. But, I mean, I'm sure it could be played for comics. I mean, I'm, you know, Weekend at Bernie's is basically a comedy about death. But the idea is, and I think that's it. It's like, it's the easiest one, so it's the one that people go to the most. And I think there, you know, I'm not saying that it's bad that they try it. I think, you know, there are deaths that are good and that, again, sounds terrible. I just feel like a lot of times it's just like, okay, we're going to make you like this character. You know, we're going to have them in all the cutscenes. They're going to be best friends of the main character. And we're going to kill them because we know this is going to hurt you the most. Instead of kind of earning that death. If that makes sense.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm just saying, and again, I think part of it, again, with as far as video games goes, my problem is really just that I feel like there are very few games that kind of get to death organically through the course of the story because of the way death and your life is usually handled in a video game, that it's hard to say that you have all these powers while playing, but when it comes to a story, like, all that's kind of removed because we need to progress to a point where this character is no longer in the story.
Yeah, dang.
So, let me see. I'm trying to think of some other deaths that have recent. I mean, I guess we had earlier, so it was the most recent death that affected. Okay, I guess for me it was Game of Thrones, but I guess before that, what was the most recent death in something that affected you?
I saw Star Trek Into Darkness, and I know this is going to be spoilerific for anyone.
Go for it. I don't care if I haven't seen it yet. I've heard so much.
You realize about halfway through the movie that it is pretty much a remake of Wrath of Khan. And in the most pivotal scene of Wrath of Khan, you know, Spock dies, and pretty much the exact same scene happens in Into Darkness, but instead of Spock being trapped in the container, it's Kirk, and Kirk dies. And Spock's reaction to Kirk dying is pretty much the exact same as Kirk's reaction to Spock in Wrath of Khan. And just because I'm such a fan of Star Trek, it did get to me, and I did get all choked up. And
then they reversed it like 10 minutes later.
But that's that. Like I understand why a lot of Trekkies would be pissed stop at that scene, but for me, it gave me the feels.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with you, but I also, while watching that, I didn't know it was my friend and Meg, they're going to resurrect him with Khan's blood. And that's what they did, so...
Oh, yeah, you can see it. But I didn't...
I feel like, and this is the problem with comic book deaths, is that if you know that they're going to find an easy out for it, it just kind of diminishes all type of emotional impact. Like, I was with you, like, I like the whole, I remembered it after the original, and it wasn't like, you know, like, it was the same kind of sacrificing yourself for the greater good, but they're like, you know, we can't cut off Kirk, or you're not going to have, you know, Star Trek 3, the quest for Kirk, or whatever. But it was weird. I'm trying to think of a recent death that has... While I'm thinking of this, I'm going to throw another one out, because this isn't a death, but the way that death is phrased in this trilogy is really interesting, how it kind of, you know, kind of weaves the first two movies and then ties in. But the death of Anakin Skywalker in the original Star Wars trilogy.
Because,
I mean, Luke is told that Darth Vader kills his father in some fashion. And, I mean, to the audience, that's true, because his father's no longer there. But when you find out what they meant by that, it was a really big, shocking moment, because his father is dead. The man that gave birth to him, the man who, you know, was responsible for his birth, just no longer exists. But, yeah, but he's still around. So it's kind of like, yeah, he's dead, but he's not dead dead.
Luke, I am your father.
And it gives us one of cinema's greatest twists. But, yeah, I did think that how that kind of, that death, supposed death, you know, and then, you know, it's one of those things with the new trilogy, it's like, then you find out that he was pretty much a wuss, so I was happy when he died.
And he also, like,
okay,
and he also...
Okay, to their credit, if you watch the Clone Wars TV series, you can see why they said, you know, he was a great pilot, and he was a hero, and he was a leader, and he was a warrior. But if you just watch the three main movies from the prequel trilogy, yeah, Anakin looks like a whiny little bitch. Part of that is the actor who plays him, though. You know?
That doesn't help.
Yeah.
And of course, he also, in the first movie is more... is a sort of like that weird thing of building Anakin up as a kid mixed in with trying to be cutesy with the whole Gungans and that, and yeah.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I can say as a kid, when I first saw, I mean, anyone who saw episode one when it was first in theaters, there's very few people at the time who were dissenting against it. A lot of people liked episode one.
I had fun with it.
Oh, yeah. That's why it broke $1 billion at the box office. I know that I walked away being, like, really happy about it. But as time goes on and things like Red Letter Media's, like, two-hour review of it becomes apparent that, yeah, there was a lot of problems there. And today we look back and we scratch our heads and we say, how did we ever think this was okay? But at the time, it's like, wow, this is an awesome movie. And then episode two came out and you were like, well, it has to be better than Phantom Menace. And then when episode three came out, everyone heard the same thing. It was like, oh, it's going to be more violent. It's going to be darker. And we all walked out and we were like, that was the best of the three. You know, so I don't think after any of those showings, anyone was really disappointed with the film. It's just they didn't age well at all.
No,
you know?
Those films.
Whereas the original trilogy is still classics. And moments like Anakin's reveal in the original trilogy and Anakin's eventual death at the end of Jedi have so much impact because the characters make sense. And their motivations are clear. And that's the big problem with the prequel trilogy, you know?
You know, I actually thought about this one thing to bring up in our fictional death episode, and I wasn't sure if it's a little bit too off the geeky reservation, so to speak, but it's
what that means.
but it's more, you know, it's a little bit off of the way of the general nerd stuff, but it's much more of a, but it's an interesting death since it has been covered in like stuff like Family Guy and crap like that. But back in the 80s, when a certain character named Bobby Ewing died and they killed him off, then the ratings got crappy, and then Larry Hagman said, "Hey, you know what? Let's bring him back. Let's bring Patrick Duffy back." Mm-hmm. And that's what became an entire season of a TV series becoming a dream.
The Roseanne.
Still one of the fun, it's still one of, because I always remember, it's actually funny, I know referencing Family Guy here, but it's actually kind of funny how they did later Family Guy reference to this reenacting that whole same sequence, and Patrick and them going, "I dreamed that in Family Guy, like da da da," and he's like, and I went, okay, that's pretty cute, that's funny, because they did the whole Bobby coming out of the shower and boom, entire season of Dream. And it's still one of the funnier moments of TV of they made an entire season a dream because the ratings were sucking that hard. And it's
that reminds me of one of my biggest pet peeves in any entertainment medium. It's the off-screen death when a major character dies, you either find out about it off screen, like they. What happened?
Contract dispute.
Yeah.
Contract.
But we're done with the show. Yeah. There's nothing that pisses me off more than seeing a character who dies off screen that's a major character. And the first one that always comes to mind is Sarah Connor. It's from the Terminator franchise.
Really?
Who. Huh?
Really? Because the first one that comes to mind for me is Jean Grey from X3. Or Cyclops from X3.
Cyclops dies on screen.
Cyclops,
I mean, he's in the movie.
But it's much more funny, and it's funnier when you go, hey, you're going to go make Superman Returns, right? Yes, I am. Well, you're dying within the first 10 minutes of the movie. Awesome.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that X3 killed.
X3, surprisingly enough, how it managed not to kill the franchise, I have. Well, technically,
it
made more money than anyone could have expected.
Well, no, because I had this discussion with my friend. The way this usually works is that if something's bad, it's not reflected into the next product. So the reason X3 did well is because people upped X2. So they're like, oh man, I upped X2, so I'm going to go see X3. So what should have happened is when X3, but it came out after X3, which I think was Wolverine Origins, that should have done poorly, which I think it did do poorly.
It did just enough that they could justify doing some more X movies, but of course they would have done X movies no matter what because they don't want to lose the license to Marvel.
Yeah, it's one of those things where with Resident Evil 6, for example, Resident Evil 6 suffered because Resident Evil 5 wasn't well received by fans, and I assume Resident Evil 7 is going to suffer because Resident Evil 6 is even less well received by fans. But yeah, Sarah Connor's, like I was saying, the reason she comes to mind, and the other one comes to mind as well, is the one from Final Destination, is because over the course of the movie, we've seen them be fighters, they're tenacious, they overcome the odds, and then it's like, oh yeah, they died, and we don't think it's worth for you to see how they died. She died because of, I think, breast cancer? And it's like, oh, okay, thanks. So we've spent 2 movies getting to know her. She's this tremendous warrior. She's always, you know, she's always found a way to survive. And then she just randomly died, and that's that. So,
and the same thing with death, like the when they do the because that off, the off-screen death is still one of those. Well, we couldn't get the actor back. Couldn't get the actress back. Screw it, we're killing him.
Yeah.
We got no idea what to do, so might as well kill him.
I mean, the other... What were you going to say? No. I was going to say the other thing is to put them on a magical transportation. Like, I was watching Teen Wolf this week, and one of the main characters have to be on Arrow. So they put him on a plane to London.
Did they blow up the plane?
No, they just put him on... He's this way they leave it open in case he wants to come back.
Oh, okay. They did that kind of, okay.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's usually popular on TV shows because you never know. Because, you know, some people go off to write pilots and, you know, sometimes the show doesn't get picked up or if it gets canceled, they can like, oh, if you want to come back, you know, your role's still here. So, yeah.
You either get killed off or you get sent to a, you get sent on a plane ride or a World Peace Conference.
World Peace
Conference. Power Rangers. Yeah.
Yes, we want raises.
Oh,
World
that
Peace
was
Conference.
That was actually another death. They actually did that twice, though. Zordon. They killed him in the first movie.
Yeah.
And they had to bring... And then they killed him at the end of In Space. Because they had to shatter his head tube thingy. So that they could vanquish all the evil in the universe. Which, I mean, if that was the case, they should have done that from episode one. But whatever. So, yeah, that was... No, that, I mean, the one in the movie was a bit touching. The other one was, wasn't as touching because it's one of those things, again, where I felt like if somebody was should have killed him, it should have been one of the original Rangers and not the Red Ranger from In Space. Because, again, it's kind of one of those earned emotional moments where mm-hmm. it should have been somebody he mentored and not somebody he had no real interactions with because he wasn't the mentor of the In Space Rangers. So, yeah, there's that. So, are there any other deaths that you folks want to talk about?
Not much offhand. I mean, outside of it was funny when we were talking about the non-consequential death of Jean Grey, and I'm like, well, technically she's back as younger version of herself from the 60s.
Yeah. Comics, what can you do?
Comics have some of the most glorious deaths and glorious... Huh?
No, I mean comic book because you have to comic books have to top themselves. Like, you can't have somebody get shot or anything because half of them wouldn't be affected by
somebody
that.
Get shot. Well, yes, you can.
I actually did think of one death that's actually kind of always a fascinating one. That's one that I have a feeling the comic series neither most people haven't read, but it's one that always fascinates me how they handle it. You guys ever hear of the Mark Waid, Barry Kitson series, Empire?
No.
Okay. It's a personal favorite of mine. It's one that the trade's a lot more difficult to find now, but it's the coolest idea of the story. It's one of the first sort of stories of what would you do if the villain, it was originally published by Gorilla and then finished up by DC Comics, and they created a character who had, what if a villain took over the world? Okay, he took over the world. Well, now you gotta take care of everything. What? That's right, you gotta take care of electricity, you gotta make sure people are fed, clothed, money's paid, all that crap, because if you don't keep people happy, you'll have a revolt on your hands. So he's now having to deal with the day-to-day of having to not just make sure he's taking over the world, but now he has to make sure everyone's taken care of so he doesn't have a revolt on his hands. And everyone else is trying to take him down, so he's like, well, crap. I gotta watch my back and make sure everyone's happy, or else everyone's gonna try to kill me. Great! Good for me! So, there's a character they introduce in the series that's kind of like been with them since the beginning of his campaign, Severus, and he's this really nice guy. You think he's gonna be your focal point of view character, and you think he's gonna be your one introducing you to the Empire, taking you through it. He's built up really well. Then, he starts saying, like, there's someone after you. And his chief's like, leave it alone. And then he keeps saying, well, someone's after you, sir. It's like, leave it alone. Then, end of the issue, they find the assassin, and the assassin's dead, but the Seabrook's like, oh, I'm glad you're okay. And he's like, you showed doubt in me, didn't you? He's like, but I was concerned, but you made me look weak. And he shoots him on sight. Done.
You should always shoot on sight.
He shot
ask questions
man,
later.
He shot the man in cold blood. He killed the man. He just shot him with a phaser blast in that. With
it. Done the same thing.
It was like, you made me look weak. Zap. You're done. And then at the end of the series is worse when he feels like his daughter, the guy's daughter's becoming a threat to his reign of terror. So he snaps his daughter's neck at the end of the series. And yeah, this series gets fucked up, by the way. Empire is a fucked up little series, but it is awesome. It is a great read. And yes, I just revealed the end of Empire, but still worth reading either way. But
I was gonna say, Earl, no point to reading it now, eh?
But it's mostly the stuff in the build up of, because it's hard, but also because the series is damn hard to find anymore. Like, you can still find copies for, like, on, you can find copies of it, but it's, damn, it's not one you can get, it's like one you can get pretty much either, like, Amazon or crap like that. Like, used bookstores.
Should it be on Comixology?
Surprisingly not. I don't think it's on Comixology yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder, it's getting harder and harder to say. It's hard to find something in the days due to age. Like, then it's just under the entertainment holder, because I can't find a movie if it's not on Netflix or Amazon Instant Video or Hulu Plus. Like, why isn't it streaming somewhere? Like, it shouldn't be like, oh, it's a super rare DVD or Blu-ray.
Yeah, I just looked it up on Comixology because I happen to have it up, and it's not on Comixology. So
yeah, it's so weird. I mean, I guess, you know, it's probably time and money, but
it's time, money, and interest, and just general, and just some comics they don't really have an interest in diving all into, and sometimes there's other issues involved, like creators' rights and how the royalties and all sorts of stuff involved in that. So
yeah, so okay, I mean, that's it for Fictional Deaths. I guess we're missing something.
Nope. I think I've got everything I've managed to remember off the top of my head. You got anything else, Trent?
No.
Okay. Which means it's time for our favorite superhero, Batman Versus, this week. And who wants to pick a number between 1 and 5? 1
four.
And 6. No. Okay, 4. Is Bender the Robot from Futurama.
Oh!
I feel like this would be an easy win for Batman if he just brings, like, a six-pack.
A six-pack and a magnet.
Just kind of distract him with booze.
Distract him with booze, and then you just get out the magnet, stick him to the magnet.
Yeah. Is Bender much of a fighter?
Not really, actually. He doesn't really fight in Futurama, does he? Does he really fight?
Most of the time.
He seems like a pretty chill guy. So, I mean, Trent, how do you see this going down?
Let's see here. And he's fighting Batman?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's see. If they were at a distance, I could see Batman throwing his batarang at Bender, and Bender opening up his stomach cavity and catching it in that. And then, I don't know, if he vomits it up or something? I don't know. It's hard. I don't know. What kind of special moves would Bender use?
But that's what we're trying to figure out.
I have no idea.
He can bend. He can bend things.
That's true.
Is he going to break the bat?
Yeah, that's the first thing I was thinking. Is he going to break the bat?
Yeah. Our minds all end in the same place.
I mean, that's like, what can inevitable thing? And then, of course, he could have Bane. And then it'd be funny if he had Bane involved. Bane's like, no! I did that!
No, Hope did that, so hopefully you wouldn't have to go through that. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a very fair fight. I mean, Batman taking on robots and giants and creatures of all designs. I mean, if anything else, he would have the Transforming Batmobile to do battle with Bender, because the Transforming Batmobile is awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that will do it for Batman Versus. As of this recording, we have a couple of stuff up on the site that you can check out. We have a pre-E3 podcast that takes a look at Sony. If you want to leave any type of E3 predictions or thoughts or comments or jazz hands, we have a post for that. You can call us, you can even email, you can tweet us, you can Facebook message us, you can even comment. Any of those means. We have comic book reviews that should be going up today. I don't really know. Trent has his Ask a Dork this week on genres that the big three should tackle at it's going to be a very heavy E3 focus because E3 is next week, so a lot of it's going to be gaming related. Nick put up his A to Z Cinema, which is X-Files Fight the Future.
Ooh.
I put up the top 7 Disney villains theme songs. Well, Disney villain songs. And not surprising, but the number 1 pick I think is pretty obvious for most people. So, yeah, check out the website www.nerdsontherocks.com. I've expanded now because of Trent Heckian. We now have an official Nerds on the Rocks Twitter account, which is at Nerds on the Rocks. You can find us on Google Plus and Facebook on the Nerds on the Rocks. You can find me on Twitter now at @ER_NOTR. You can find Trent at InstaTrent. You can find Wesley at Captain Comic Capt.
Cap.
How do you say that?
CAPT Comic Addict.
Okay.
I couldn't put Captain because it broke the Twitter boundary, so
I didn't know there was a limit on the number of characters you could use.
Yeah, I broke Twitter's character limit, so I had to go Captain Comic at it. Like Captain Hook, or Captain Sultan.
Captain TJ Hooker.
Captain TJ Hooker. I like riding cars, like William Shatner.
So yeah, that will do it for us this week. We'll be back next week. One more thing. Check out the Man of Steel cast. We did Superman 4 this week. We did Supergirl last week. We should have Superman Returns up next week. Superman has not had a great history in movies so far, so. And I'm not watching Steel again, so there's that. So check that out. Vote on our poll for your most wanted Sony platformer resurrection. And catch us next week. So for Nick, this is the Step Up Early, Trent, Wesley, and myself. This has been Nerds on the Rocks, episode 135.
Yay!
Boop-a-doo!
And who are you? The proud Lord said that I must bow so low. Only a cat of a different coat. That's all the truth I know. And a coat of gold, or a coat of red, a lion still has claws, and mine are long and sharp, my lord, as long and sharp as yours. And so he spoke. And so he spoke, that Lord of Castamere. But now the rains weep o'er his hall, with no one there to hear. Yes, now the rains weep o'er his hall, and not a soul to hear. Proud Lord said that I must bow so low. Only a cat of a different coat, that's all the truth I know. And a coat of gold, or a coat of red, a lion still has claws, and mine are long and sharp, my lord, as long and sharp as yours.